It's your health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM. Today's show is very near and dear to my heart. I am so honored to be joined by three incredible women, Glandis Dandevin, Julie Holker, and Michelle Rickaby. They are the authors of the honest, moving, and inspiring book, Choosing to Smile, Inspirational Life Stories of Three Friends Who Happen to Have Cancer. Today, we're going to talk about their stories and how they started Choosing to Smile, a worldwide movement for people who have faced any kind of adversity and have chosen to smile in the face of it. Glenda, Julie, and Michelle, welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM.
Thank you, Lisa.
Hello.
I'm so glad to have you gals on the show. I absolutely loved your book. And I'd love to start the way your book does by focusing on each one of you. And then I'd love to hear how you all came together. So Glenda, I'd love to start with you. Glenda, you came from a family of four girls and two boys, and you had a brother, Sylvan, who died as a baby when you were two. And you write about how knowing you had a big brother helped you through some tough times. And if you can tell us about that and also just more about your childhood.
You know, I think everybody always wants a big brother to look after them when they're growing up, especially when you've got a lot of sisters in the family. And I think Sylvan was that for me. He was sort of my own little personal angel, and we never talked about him. I found a picture of him when he was in his little casket, and I went, "Who's this, Mom?" And she told me that it was my big brother, and it just sort of made it real for me that, wow, I had a big brother. And she says, "Yes, he's in heaven now." And you know, as kids go, that sort of made sense to me. And then I had another brother who was the baby of the family. Jimmy, he was our little brother, and everybody loved him. And he was killed in a car accident when he was 16. So I lost my big brother when he was just a baby and never really ever knew him at all, of course. But my little brother we had for 16 years, and he was just amazing.
I was so sorry to read that. That I was crying. That was that. I can't even imagine. My heart really goes out to you and your family. And you know, speaking of your family, you write that your dad was a dreamer and your mom a realist. How did that influence you, Glenda?
Well, I like to think I got the best of both worlds. My dad, he would see opportunity everywhere, and my mom was more the one who would go, "Now, Barney, really, you really can't do that. Think of it. You think of all the things that could go wrong." And so he would keep on dreaming, and Mom would keep on pointing out the why not, you can't do it because. So I think for me, I captured the dreamer part of my dad, and with a little bit of healthy, well, is it realistic?
Yeah, no, I think that's good. Now, Glenda, they found a tumor in your hip, and if you can tell everyone how old you were and what was going on in your life at that time.
I had a wonderful marriage of 5 years. We had a three-year-old son, and I was having a little bit of pain in my hip, and we wanted to add to our family, and I thought, I've got this little bit of a niggle there, and if I get pregnant with this pain in my hip, it's going to probably get worse and it just escalates, so I better get it checked out. And one thing led to another, and one doctor said it was bursitis, and it wasn't, and my chiropractor said, you know, you should get an x-ray. It's not moving the way it should, and it ended up that it was a tumor in the hip bone that had moved up into the pelvic area, so I ended up eventually having a hemipelvectomy surgery, which is the complete amputation of the leg, the hip, and the pelvis on the right side.
Wow. And then I know you wrote about Peggy 2, which was the prosthetic that you eventually got. I know at first you didn't, and I like that Peggy 2.
Me too. Yeah, we had to have a nickname for the leg, and it wasn't very functional because when you've lost so much, more than two joints, it's really more cosmetic than functional. And when I got pregnant, surprise, surprise, after 2 years of being an amputee, and we celebrated on our two-year all-clear anniversary, and wow, I ended up pregnant. So we had this wonderful package presented to us, this beautiful boy, and to manage the whole pregnancy without the pelvic bone. I went to Oklahoma City and had an amazing leg made, lightweight pregnancy leg that expanded with me through the whole pregnancy, and I wore that Peggy 2 through the pregnancy, and it supported the weight where there was no pelvic bone, so it supported the growing baby inside, and Peggy 2 retired, I wore her out and never went back to a leg afterward because it was just too slow, too awkward.
Now, you decided to take a refresher course in foot reflexology in 1994, and that's how you and Julie met. And Julie, what was going on for you at this time in your life? And then I'd love to start at the beginning as well, but if you want to tell us when you met Glenda.
Yeah, I had had some reflexology done by some friends in England before I'd moved over to Canada in 1988. And in 94, I'd had a reaction to some antibiotics that had caused some ongoing problems. And I just decided that I needed to get some reflexology. So I phoned, looked in the yellow pages, couldn't find any. So I phoned the Director Inquiries in Chilliwack, and at that time you actually spoke to a real person.
Oh, that's refreshing.
Yeah, and I asked if there was anybody in Chilliwack who did that, and there was a bit of a silence at the end of the phone, and the lady said, this is really strange. I just got a brand new business, just opened an hour ago, and this is the number.
Oh, my goodness.
So I picked up the phone again and dialed the number and said spoke to Glenda, and I said I was interested in reflexology. And again, there was a bit of a silence initially, and she said, how did you get my number? And I said, well, I called Director Inquiries, and she said, but I only gave it to them an hour ago. And that was how we met. And I had some reflexology, and things got better, and didn't need to continue. But I did refer a friend who was needing some help with reflexology. And then later on, when I had some surgery, the friend sent Glenda to the hospital to see me to do reflexology rather than send flowers.
Oh,
and from then,
nice.
Our friendship blossomed.
Oh, that's great. Now, Julie, you write that you thought of yourself as little Julie Smith from,
Pleasington.
Pleasington at an early age, and you grew up with three siblings, and that your money was tight in your family. If you can tell us a little bit more about your childhood.
We lived in a tiny village. Pleasington was a tiny village. It was a very sheltered environment. It was one of the older type villages. It had a beautiful church, a little two-room school. We were able to explore the fields and enjoy the outdoors. We had a lot of freedom. Money was tight. My dad worked for British Rail, and it was always tight. We were never a family with lots of money, but, you know, we got by.
Oh, yeah. No, it sounds like, I mean, just running around the fields and living in a small area like that, it actually sounds really nice. And you write that when you were 18 years old, your life changed dramatically. What happened?
I went to do nurse training at a hospital in a town about 12 miles away. I moved into the nurse's home, and I grew up very quickly. At that time, when you went into nurse training school, you did 8 weeks in school, and then you were out on the wards. And the nurses on the wards, the student nurses, were a big part of the workforce. They weren't observers at that time. So you were, within weeks, I was doing things like enemas and injections and
wow.
IV bottles and laying out dead bodies, and it was terrifying.
Oh, I bet.
As an 18-year-old, it really was.
Oh, my gosh.
And so I grew up very quickly.
Oh, I bet. Now, tell us about Graham.
Graham I met when I was 17, and fell in love, and he's my soulmate, my rock. We were married when I was 21, and we've been married now for 34 years.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, reading about you two was just so nice. You just have such a beautiful relationship.
I'm very blessed.
Yes.
Very blessed. Yeah.
Wow. You know, and then, you know, you got your cancer. How old were you, first of all? And it was metastatic, am I saying it right? Breast cancer?
Originally, it wasn't metastatic.
Okay.
It was local breast cancer.
Oh, that's right. Mm-hmm.
Which means it was just in the breast. And I was just 2 weeks short of my 41st birthday. And that's almost 15 years ago. I had the treatment, I had reconstruction, went through all that, recovered well, and it was almost 5 years later when I had a recurrence underneath the reconstruction. Mm-hmm. So I then went on to have the reconstruction removed. So I'm actually one of the few women in the world who's had a mastectomy on the same side twice.
Wow.
So, and then I had radiation. And then I had 6 great years where I was very well. Then in 2006, it was discovered that the cancer had spread to the lining of my right lung. And that is metastatic. That is when the cancer has left the breast area and has gone to other organs in your body. And so I've been living with that since 2006.
Oh my goodness. And I understand that you were just in the hospital and you had a pneumonia, was that correct, from the chemo?
That's right, yeah. Yeah, with metastatic cancer, basically it's not curable, but it's treatable. And so you, once that's diagnosed, you're basically on treatment for the rest of your life, some kind of treatment. And the chemo that I've been on recently seemed to have caused a reaction in my lungs.
Okay.
So that was last week, but things are getting better.
Oh, I'm so glad. And, you know, Michelle, you were the third child, and your mom was an announcer on the radio and was a writer for the local newspaper, and this was, what, 1949, I think you wrote, and your grandmother moved in when you were a year old to take care of you. If you can tell us about that time in your life.
Yeah, it was in 1959.
Oh, 59, sorry.
Sure, my mom was involved in her career. And she already had 2 children, my sister, my oldest sister, and then my brother. So it was a few years later that I came along. So she was quite busy with the radio and the newspaper and things. So I had 2 older siblings. But then my grandma came and lived with us to help take care of me while Mom went on to work. But we also got to do a lot of public activities with the local radio station that Mom was out doing interviews and covering different events. So we got to really get involved in some things. So that was a lot of fun.
Oh, God. Now, you write that when you were 8, your mother and grandmother left, and you stayed living with your dad and your brother, Jim?
Yes, that's right.
Okay, how was that for you?
Well, it was a big change. The house had been full before with lots of women and cooking and, you know, people taking care of the kids. And then with the 3 women that left, because my sister also went at the same time. So then I had my dad, a single dad, with the 2 of us to take care of. But you know, we managed. It was good. We had a really good neighborhood, people that took care of us. So.
Oh, that's good. Now, you quit school in 11th grade, and you got married at 19 to Greg.
Mm-hmm.
And then later you had 2 girls, Melissa and Megan, and then you got diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma. And, oh, I wanted to mention, too, I'm so sorry about your brother. You can tell us about Jim.
Yeah, Jim was 28 years old, and he was diagnosed with Hodgkin's disease. And at the time, we didn't know anything about cancer or and we certainly didn't think that it was something that young people would get. But Jim was diagnosed. He was misdiagnosed at the first. They said he had the flu and just take an extra week off of work and go back to work, but he kept getting worse. So when he was finally diagnosed, he passed away 10 months later.
Mm.
So he was just 29 years old.
I'm so sorry. So then when you, how old were you when you got the lymphoma?
I was 28 years old.
Oh my gosh. How did that play with your mind? I mean, that must have been so challenging.
It was very scary because we had 2 small children as well, Melissa and Megan, 1 and 4 years old. And I found a lump in my neck and went to the doctor, and doctors didn't want to believe it either. They said, oh, well, you know, you're too young. Let's have a look at that. And then when they did check it out, then it got a little bit more serious. And I always told them, I said, my brother had Hodgkin's as well. So then they did pay attention and kind of jumped to it and start me with a lot of tests and surgery, and then I went into treatment.
Okay. Well, I just want to say, you know, reading your book, I was just so moved. I mean, I love that you brought together the idea of choosing to smile, because I think I would be frowning. I mean, I'm just being honest. You've all been through so much, and Julie, I know you're continuing to go through a lot, and I just want to commend you all. Now, Julie, I know how you and Glenda met, and I actually know the whole story because I read the book, but for people who don't know, how did the 3 of you come together? Glenda, if you'd like to talk about that.
I just draw the most amazing people into my circle, and I was really fortunate Michelle phoned. She was looking for a support group for cancer, and I had been in contact with the Cancer Society, and he remembered me saying that at one point I was involved with a support group, but there was nothing in Chilliwack anymore. Michelle got my number, called me out of the blue, and said, "Hi, I'm Michelle, and I would really like to start a support group." And she was kind of nervous, and she just had this warm sincerity in her voice, and I went, "I think I like her." and I did, and I do. So we started a support group for cancer patients, and we ran that group, oh, I think since 91, for 11 years.
Oh,
twice
wow.
a month.
That's
yeah,
great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And our friendship just grew from there, and then we joined an Optimist Club. I was in an Optimist Club, and then I needed new members and ended up with Michelle as a member. And Julie, of course, came, as she said, with through reflexology. And then again, when she had her cancer, and I said, "Hey, by the way, we have a support group. You want to come?" And she started coming to our Living with Cancer support group, and then said, "You know, you'd be an awesome Optimist Club member." And so she was in the Optimist Club as well. And before we knew it, we had all of us in the Optimist Club with our good friend Bonnie as well. And just we called ourselves the Four Musketeers.
Oh, that's great. Glenn, if you can tell us a little bit about Bonnie.
Oh, you would have loved her, Lisa. She was this tall, statuesque woman. And when I first walked into school on my son Kevin's first day of kindergarten, I was scared because there I am, a one-legged lady and pregnant, going, okay, taking my child to his first day of kindergarten and thinking, oh my gosh, is this tougher on him or me? I don't know. And Bonnie was there like this beacon across the room, just shining. And I went over and started chatting. She goes, "Well, the kids look like they're okay." And her boy was the same age as mine, and they started playing together. And she says, "Why don't you come down to my house for coffee?"
Oh, that's so nice.
And I really like her. And that's how our friendship started with Bonnie. And then, of course, with Michelle and Julie, and the circle just sort of widened out and included all of us. So I guess I was the catalyst for bringing us all together. And that way that our friendships sort of overlapped because of my circle going out into the community.
Yeah. You know, I'm sure people listening who are going through illnesses, whether it be cancer or something else, I mean, everyone's going to have up and down moments. And I think it's, you know, it's important to say that it's great. I mean, obviously being optimistic and choosing to smile is so important, but also acknowledging that everyone's going to have their down times. And I know you wrote so honestly, all three of you, about that in the book. You know, I mean, there's a lot of hard things that come along, and I just wanted to mention that. And also for people listening, if they're struggling with trying to be more positive, I mean, what are small steps that they can take to help themselves? Because it can be really difficult.
Yeah, well, right now, the last year for me has been quite a challenging one, and I certainly don't find it easy to choose to smile every day. There are days when I need to punch the cushions and kick the couch, but I think the thing that I try to do is find something that I can see joy in every day.
Yes.
Just any little thing, just to find some joy on the days when I'm struggling the most.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not always easy. It's sometimes it takes a while. But that's what I do right now.
No, I think that's wonderful advice. How about for you, Michelle, when you were having some hard times?
Well, the things that kept me going every day was watching the girls. They were little, and I just watched their faces, you know, their smiling faces, laugh. Just being kids, and they really kept me going every day.
Oh, that's great. And Glenda, how about for you, especially, you know, just thinking about losing your brother, Jim, who was only 16?
You know, there have been so many hardships in all of our lives. And for me, it was to count the blessings, to look at it and say, what if I'd never, ever had a chance to meet Jimmy? I am so lucky I had him for 16 years. And focusing and finding something positive, like Julie said, you just have to say, okay, turn it around, look at it. I remember when I told my mom that I was pregnant with Andrew, my second one, and being that I'd had cancer and only had half a pelvis, and I was so excited, so happy, and mom reached over and she goes, "Now, honey, don't get too excited because you never know, something could happen." And I looked at her and I went, "Mom, if it's okay with you, how about if I be really happy and really excited until something happens?"
Exactly.
If it does.
Yes. And what'd your mom say?
Having a wonderful support of friends, and my husband is just amazing. I was very blessed to have, like Julie said, a rock for a husband. A real strong, emotional man who supported me.
Now, tell us about Choosing to Smile and its mission, and how do people get involved? I mean, are there groups around different areas, or tell us about that?
Who do you want to take that one?
The only reason I'm asking Glenda is you're the clearest connection. So, gals, I don't want you to think I'm ignoring you. And this will be edited out, but whoever wants, you know, for some reason, when I'm trying to turn up, I've been using I have a balancing board and everything, but you're still low, but I can get you. But the higher I turn you, Julie and Michelle, you gals up, the more fuzzy it sounds. So that's why, if Glenda, if you want to answer that, that would be
Okay. Our mission actually is to reach out to people who have been through any type of adversity, not just cancer. And we want to specify that because all of us have had other struggles. Michelle's been through a divorce. I've lost my father, and Julie did as well, and Michelle lost her mom, and siblings along the way, and all those bumps in the road. So it's not just a book about surviving cancer. It's about choosing to find the good in all the adversities that you encounter in your life, and also to find the strength in friendship. If you look at our logo on the book, you'll see it. What do you see when you look at it?
Well, this is embarrassing. I don't have it in front of me. I have all my. I'll edit it.
If you were to look,
although I know you gals, you three gals are on there, and you're all gorgeous. I actually have all my notes, and yeah.
The logo on the back of the book, it's two faces in silhouette. But most people, when they look at it, they see the candle. They see a symbol of a candle. And when we designed the logo, it was to symbolize the light that's found in friendship. Because when you come together and that strength, the light, it just does put the light in the dark places. And that's sort of what our whole mission is, to show people that that light at the end of the tunnel doesn't have to be a train.
Yeah, that's true. No, I think it's great. I think friendship makes such a difference. My mother, it'll be 15 years since she passed of ovarian cancer this year, and I still can't believe it. And I miss her every day, and I need to choose to smile more because I get down. Oh, she never met my husband. She never met my daughter. Instead of like thinking about the good things. So you gals are a good influence on me.
Lisa, I want to tell you something. You know, when my little boy was, maybe Andrew was sitting at the table and he was about 4 years old coloring away, and I was at the dishes sink, and he said, "Mom, do you know why I picked you to be my mom?" And I'm thinking, no, I haven't a clue, actually. And he said, "Well, before I was born, I was in heaven, and I was looking down, and I saw that you only had one leg, and I knew that one day you'd need me to push you in your wheelchair."
Oh, my goodness.
And I just got goosebumps, and I went, wouldn't that be cool? Like, what an awesome philosophy that kids pick their parents, and they get to see things before they're born. He was so cute, and I just thought, who knows, maybe that is the way it works. So maybe your mom did get to meet everybody, and maybe she has seen that. You just don't know.
No, you're right. You are right. And my daughter also lost her other grandmother, my husband's mother, unfortunately 2 years ago to cancer. And she asked regularly, "Why can't I take a plane up to heaven?" And then tonight she said, "Hi, what if my stuffed animal Ratburn grew really huge and we had some magic and I could sit on his back and he could fly me up there just for a visit, and I swear I'd come back." You know, like, she's always so cute, like kids, you know, the way they think about things. It's really sweet.
I love it.
Yeah, kids are wonderful. Well, I just want to thank you all so much. And I encourage everyone to check out your book, Choosing to Smile. It really is inspirational. And I love books that are honest and really share from the heart how you feel about things. And to see the friends in your life and the, you know, the husbands and the everybody, it's just wonderful. And if you can tell us, Julie, if you can give us your information of how people can check you out on your website.
They can find us at www.choosingtosmile.com, and books can be ordered through the website. People can contact us through info@choosingtosmile. And right now, the books are available for sale in bookstores in BC, not yet out on the East Coast, but hopefully in the near future.
Now, Chilliwack is in Canada, and where in Canada is it? I love that name.
We're in Western Canada, in British Columbia.
Oh, I've heard it's wonderful there.
Yeah, it's a beautiful place to live.
Oh, I bet.
About an hour's drive east of Vancouver.
And about 3 hours from Seattle.
Oh, really? Oh, I love Seattle.
It's a nice city.
It is a nice city. Well, I want to thank you, gal, so much for taking the time to do this. And if people want to learn more, again, make sure to check out their website. And people can learn more about the show and the other shows that I'm doing on itsyourhealthnetwork.com. I hope everyone has a great day. Be sure to choose to smile and take care. Bye-bye.